Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
All right, welcome back to the Gentle Art of Crushing It. My name is Randy Smith. I'll be your host today, and I'm really excited to have Todd Dexheimer with us today. Todd is a multifamily syndicator. He is the owner of Enduris Capital. He's been in real estate investing since 2008, primarily in multifamily, but he has done single family, mobile home parks, a ski resort, and assisted living. And he's also the podcast host of Pillars of Wealth Creation. So, Todd, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Randy, really appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to it.
Outstanding. Well, let's just jump right in. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you found yourself where you are today?
Yeah. So, I'm born and raised in the Midwest, Minnesota. A guy, Twin Cities guy. So, if anybody listening is Minnesota, reach out. We can, you know, hang out and have a cup of coffee. I was a high school teacher. That's how I started my career. So I was teaching high school shop class, woods, metals, that sort of thing. And very quickly realized it just wasn't for me. I think W-2, quite frankly, wasn't for me, but also teaching wasn't for me. I enjoyed the teaching aspect, but I didn't enjoy all the extra kind of, for lack of a better word, BS that goes along with it.
Sure.
Yeah. So quickly, I think about 3 days in, I told my wife, I got to figure out what I'm going to do for the rest of my life because teaching's not it. And I taught for several more years. But through just, you know, reading books and just being curious, I got very interested in owning my own business and then got very interested in buying real estate. And so off to that journey went. Just a lot of study and a lot of learning about real estate. And the only thing I could wrap my head around buying, Randy, was just a single family house. I couldn't figure out how to buy anything bigger than a single family or duplex. And so that's where I started. And that was 2008. And it was the worst time to buy real estate because the fire was going, the flames were burning, everybody was jumping out, and I'm like, I'm gonna jump into this thing. But it was also the best time because I was naive, I was stupid, I did not understand that you shouldn't be buying real estate. I only looked at the numbers and went, wow, I can buy a duplex for $60,000 and I can rent each unit for, you know, $800 a month. Wow. Man, this seems to make a lot of sense when everybody else is like, dude, you're an idiot. Get out of here. What are you doing? You know, you're going to lose a bunch of money. And you know, what's funny is I did lose money on paper when I bought these single family homes and the duplexes and stuff like that. You know, I think of the very first property I bought was a single family home. I ended up renting it for, I think, $1,350 a month. I bought it for $65,000. Wow. And I put another, you know, $20,000 into it, and it lost value. It was probably lost about, you know, $15,000-$20,000 of value because the market just kept on going downward.
Got it.
Right. But here's the deal: I was cash flowing $600 a month, so I didn't care it was losing value, and that's where it started to hit me. Like, I just got to keep on buying stuff. I just got to keep on going. So I from 2008. When the world was on fire through 2015, I bought and sold, flipped, 100 plus properties,
wow,
mostly 1 to 4 family properties, some smaller apartments as well. I did the ski resort that you mentioned. I did a mobile home park. But it was mostly bread and butter was, you know, the 1 to 4 family. I would really flip, Randy, I would flip about 3 houses and keep one. It wasn't an exact science or anything, but that's what it ended up working out to be. And then 2015, I just went and looked at it and I said, man, I can't keep going this way. It's not going to work. I had a business partner at the time and him and I split. And I said, what has worked well and what do I enjoy? And I went and analyzed everything. I took everything I'd done for the last, 8 years and went, have I enjoyed the most? And what has worked the best? And I looked at it and said, man, these rentals are awesome. When mm-hmm. I look at what they're worth on paper, when I look at my cash flow, this is great. I'm going to focus on that. So I stopped flipping properties and I started buying apartment buildings and focusing on that cash flow and appreciation through value add and off to the races I went. And that's where I'm still focused on and stuck on today is I buy apartment buildings, value add, cash flow, create that equity through the value add and continue to push on. So.
Are you interested in real estate investing but don't know where to get started or think you don't have the time or money? Are you stuck in your W-2 because the golden handcuffs make it hard to walk away? If this sounds like you, check out impactequity.net and schedule some time to talk with the founder, Randy Smith. Randy went from massive income to leaving his W-2 through passive income, and he can help you do the same. www.impactequity.net.
I love it. So yeah, it's you're kind of that classic example of the guy who started in one, had the W-2 that hated and wanted to find another way. So that seems to be a common theme I hear over and over and over again. And I'm actually subscribed to that as well. And then you went the single family route, ultimately finding multifamily, but you didn't just do a handful of single family. You literally did 100+, which I don't come across that often to flip or buy and hold 100 properties is like, that's a very significant business. That's not something you do as a side gig or something on the side. So
no, I mean, at one time I had about 100 1-4 family properties and was holding those, as rentals. And now I'm down to, I think about 30.
Okay.
So I still own some of them. And I, quite frankly, I'll probably keep them for, the near term at least.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting. When I got into the space, we were striving for that 1% rule, and it sounds like you were in 2% plus on some of those early assets. Yeah. And the numbers work at 1% rule. So so those were clearly cash flowing very well for you. So I'm curious, what did the business look like at that point? You mentioned you had a partner, but did you have large crews of construction, or did you handle your own property management? What did all of that look like? I'm just curious.
Yeah, handled the own our own property management. We had some maintenance people that would work on the properties. Mainly, actually, our maintenance was really our construction crews that were also flipping. They were essentially our maintenance people. We had some other maintenance guys, but so that was kind of that aspect. I did some of the showings. Also, would hire real estate agents to do showings. Never actually hired a staff person that did showings, but I would have real estate agents doing showings. And a lot of times what I would do is a quote unquote open house, as I would have contractors there. So if I'd have contractors there, the doors would be open and people could walk through the house and there would be an application sitting on the counter for them to take. And so I wouldn't even have to show up. And that worked actually really well.
It's brilliant. Yeah.
I just set up and run like 20 people through the property all within like a day. And then by the end of the day, I'd have, two or three applications where we all be good. And then, I had in-house, we had our, our bookkeeper staffing and people like that. So.
Okay. So relatively, small organization that's owning and managing 100 plus.
We had our construction crews too, right? Because we were flipping. So we had our construction crews, used a lot of subcontractors, but still had our core guys that were running the jobs.
Yeah. I love the strategy of having an open house where you're your subs or your maintenance guys out there are doing work, and they're essentially the ones showing the property.
Yeah.
And ultimately they ended up having to interact with the tenants as well. So
yeah.
I can imagine there's some funny stories there.
Yeah. You know, nothing that sticks out. I mean, I've got so many goofy stories throughout, but
I'm sure,
yeah, you know, usually I'd you know, get it set up to where we're kind of on the last, you know, 80%, or we had 80% done, you know, we're in the last like 20, you know, 10-20% of the work left to be done there. And then we'd start showing it. And it's funny because to this day, I struggle with our property management companies that, you know, we hire third party property management and our asset manager. And I struggle with it because they all always want the unit to be 100% done. And I'm like, that goes against everything I did.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story. So I had this triplex that I ended up purchasing. I got it under contract, quite frankly, by accident. I didn't even know what I was putting the offer on. For some reason, I had no clue about the sight unseen, put this offer. I just knew that, like, this thing was worth a lot of money. And I put an offer in. I think it was $86,000 is what I bought it for, triplex. And this is near a private college in St. Paul. Beautiful area.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to probably get a decent amount for rent. And so I threw this property under contract thinking it was a triplex, three bedroom, two bedroom, one bedroom.
Okay.
I go there after I get it, you know, get the offer accepted. I quickly go there and I look and I'm like, something's going on here. I can't figure out what is missing. And I see this kind of outline of what looked like a door, but there was drywall over it. And don't tell the bank, but I kicked a hole in it.
Okay.
And I poked my head through and there was a whole nother unit there. So this thing was a fourplex, but it was a legal fourplex. So I had to convert it back to a triplex.
Sure.
But it had a whole nother bathroom. It had a whole nother bedroom and it had a kitchen that we were able to expand then into a bigger kitchen.
Love it.
Now, the better part is I'm like, I don't know who I'm going to be able to rent this to. Can I get college kids or not? It's a little far from campus, but I think I can. So I throw ads out there for college kids. It's University of St. Thomas. Throw college kids out there, throw ads for these college kids, and I get a ton of showings. And okay. All I did is I showed up with a book with pictures, right, to show them our finished product of what our properties look like. And yeah. I run these kids through and I get tons of applications. And they're literally walking through this hole that I kicked out to get to part of the, and this is a disaster. It's called a category 2, which means the city needs you to fix it big time.
Yeah. Right?
But that's how we showed properties. We just said, I know it's a rack. But just imagine what it's going to look like.
Just imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, sidetracked our story.
No, I think it's a good story and lesson for property managers out there. Like, don't be afraid to show properties when it's not perfect. You're going to have a punch list at a minimum, even when they do move in and they think it's perfect. So yeah, that's awesome.
I tell that story to my on-site staff. I will tell that story to them. We'll have an asset management meeting and I jump on there and I hear them complaining because they don't have any ready units. They're all being worked on. And then I tell them that story. Yeah. I'm like, look, if I can do this, you can do this. You have pictures of the finished unit. Go show a unit and get it rented.
Love it. I love it. Yeah, no, that's great. I think it says a lot too. Like, you could show this is our portfolio. This is what everything looks like that we finish. And this is going to look like that as well. And, you know, being a sales guy by nature, I'm thinking you could present that in such a way that you have an opportunity as a tenant to take this before it's done, before all the other folks are going to want to see it done. So yeah, it seems like it'd be a great selling opportunity. So, okay. So you've got 100+ units, you and partner are deciding to part ways and you start looking at multifamily. And mm-hmm. you know, like the common theme that we hear over and over and over is all the benefits of multifamily over single family.
Yeah.
But what really jumped out to you? Like, why was that the clear path? It clearly aligned with your strengths, but was there a bigger picture that you were striving for or towards that caused you to go down that path?
Well, you know, I looked at what could I do. I wanted to grow a business and to be a my biggest goal, and it still is, has always been, I could retire tomorrow. Look, it's fine. I could walk away. A lot of people could walk away and be done, but that doesn't excite me. Right? Mm-hmm. I want to make an impact. And so that was kind of my, how can I make the biggest impact? And I can't make the biggest impact buying a bunch of single family houses. Can I make an impact doing that? Yeah, I absolutely can. But I have limitations as to how many single family houses I can buy. So let's just say I have 100 at the time, which is about accurate. And so I'm affecting 100 families. That's great. But if I can have 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 units, now I affect 5,000 families, 3,000 yeah. families, whatever it is. So I can possibly affect more people. And then, by the way, if I have more units, I've got more employees, so I can positively affect them. And yeah. by the way, if I've got more units and I've got more employees and I've got more cash flow, then I've got more cash, which then I can utilize that cash to affect more people positive in a positive way. So it's kind of that, how can I make the biggest impact? And the biggest impact mm-hmm. is not through one, it's through thousands, right? And the more I can do, to an extent, I got to do a good job, right? I can't just grow just to have more. I got to grow to be purposeful about what I'm doing and make sure I'm doing it right, because I want to positively affect people. I don't want to negatively affect people. So that's yeah. the key, right? But that's really what I looked at. And I looked at, like you said, there's all these benefits to multifamily. And don't get me wrong, single family can be great if you do it right. It can be absolutely. I'm not anti single family and duplexes, but when apples to apples, I think multifamily is going to be far more effective to kind of hitting my goals mm-hmm. and where I want to grow the company and how I want to impact people. Multifamily was definitely the way to go.
I love it. Yeah, I find that when I talk to a ton of entrepreneurs, and I have for years and years and years with just the sales roles that I've had, and when you find somebody that's building a business, not to just get more commas in their bank accounts, but to impact more, and to truly have a desire to help improve the lives of multiple families or people. Those are the businesses that seem to have the staying power, and they're the businesses that seem to grow and obviously contribute and help the most people. So yeah, hats off for that. I love hearing that theme. Impact investing is something, obviously, my company, Impact Equity. Our right. goal is to positively impact as many passive investors as possible. And,
right.
And you're doing the same thing, but a much broader aspect. So very neat. So now that initial dream or desire to launch the business and grow, I don't assume that you just started, you know, purchasing 100 plus units left and right, bought 10 of those in the first couple of years. Probably a pretty slow, steady process, I would imagine. What yeah. did that first couple of years look like in multifamily?
Yeah, and by the way, it's still a slow, steady process. I've never been, and I don't think I ever will be, someone that's going to go out there and buy a bunch of buildings just to buy them. They have to make sense. They have to work into our business plan. We have to be able to execute the business plan. Not that I wouldn't do that, but I have to make sure that we are set up to affect, to do it in the best possible way, right? So,
okay.
I mean, I was buying a lot of single families, so it's not that I wouldn't. It just, I have to feel like we can be successful at it. So, yeah, so I started buying smaller apartment buildings, you know, 10, 20 unit type apartment buildings. And then what happened is a mentor of mine, I was talking to him about a mutual connection that we both have. And I said, I want to be like, I'll just call him Jim. Okay. I want to be like Jim. I want to do what Jim is doing. And Jim at the time was buying 100, 200, 300 unit buildings. And I said, I want to get there. That's where I want to go. And my mentor looks at me and goes, okay, you know Jim. I know Jim. Jim is not smarter than you. He hasn't been in this business as long as you. You know more about real estate and about construction and about what's going and how to underwrite these deals than Jim does. And I'm like, really? He said, yeah, 100%.
Huh.
And he said, so what is stopping you right now from doing it? Why aren't you buying a 100 unit building today? And right there, that at that moment, I said, you're right. I'm going to go buy a 100 unit building. And so probably within a few months of that conversation, I had an 84 unit building under contract. And then within a few months after that, I had 120 unit building under contract. And that kind of started the ball rolling. And then from there, I just continued to acquire, you know, 2 to 5, 6 properties a year.
Okay. So you hear a lot of folks say that, you know, buying a 100 unit is actually easier than buying a couple of 40 units or 330 units. Would you agree with that? Or do you think the right path is to go big faster or start small and build your way up?
So I don't agree with that. I think it's harder to buy a larger building, but it's not that much harder.
Okay.
If I'm going to buy a duplex, that's an easy transaction. I can do that with my own money. You know, it's an easy transaction. It's a lot harder for me to find a 150 unit apartment complex. It's harder for me to get the financing. It's harder for me to get the money. All that kind of stuff is harder. Now, it doesn't take that much more time.
Sure.
It probably takes a little bit more effort, but not that much more effort. So I think as far as like the ratio of work to the size, certainly the 100, 150 unit is weight. Easier for what you get, but it's still harder. As far as what somebody should start with, look, here's what I would say to people all the time. It's like, look, start where you will start. If somebody told me that, look, man, the only thing you cannot start with a 20 unit building. Don't do that. You can't. You have to buy a 200 unit building. I don't know if I ever would have started.
Yeah.
That would have scared the crap out of me. And I would have said, I can't do it. I'm just going to keep on buying these duplexes. Right. And so start where you'll start, but always continue to push your boundaries, push your limits, and challenge yourself to get to the next level as quickly as possible. Do I wish I would have gotten bigger quicker? Absolutely. That would have been great. At the same time, I don't regret it because I've learned a ton of valuable lessons along the way. And I do realize, like I said, I don't think I would have started if somebody would have told me you have to do a 200 unit building, otherwise just don't do anything. I would have been like, well, I'm going to continue to do the duplex then.
Yeah. So I think that's such a good point. Now when we were talking before this too, you mentioned something that I thought was really interesting and I think it applies here, but you don't feel like most people should own their own specific real estate from an investing standpoint. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because a lot of people listening to the show might be on the fence. Like, should I be a passive investor or should I just go out and buy some singles and duplex and triplex?
Yeah. So I think people need to start to be honest with themselves. Okay. So I feel like almost everybody wants to buy real estate. Most people understand that real estate's a powerful tool. Most people that understand that real estate's a great investment, that wealthy people own real estate. So that's just pretty common knowledge, I feel like, for most people. Okay, so most people think that the best way to do that is to go buy the duplex or the single family home, but they don't understand that you're buying a business. You are buying a business. So if you don't have time to manage that business and look after it, why are you buying the business? And so that's where you get the angry uncle that says, the tenants, the toilets, and the trash, right? They're all irritated and they have this crappy investment. So here's what ends up happening to a lot of people. They go buy this single family home, they buy the duplex, whatever it is. And some of them say, oh, I'm going to go buy turnkey because there's these turnkey operators on there. I'm going to say that turnkey is garbage, but each their own, right? I don't like it. They go, and they think it's going to be passive. So I shouldn't say turnkey is garbage. Turnkey is garbage because of the mindset of a lot of people buying turnkey, is they think that buying turnkey means they don't do anything. Yeah. And that's just not the case. You're still going to do stuff. You still need to make decisions. You're still going to have to asset manage. You're still going to have to take phone calls. There's decisions still to be made. And by the way, there's expenses still to be had. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you a quick story. I buy a single family home and it's cash flowing $600 a month. Beautiful, right? Beautiful thing. I'm going to buy a couple of them maybe even, and they're cash flowing $600-$800 a month. And I'm making money and it's feeling good. And then a tenant calls me up and says, "Hey, the heat's not working. Mr. Dexter, the heat's not working." And so I send my HVAC guy over there. He gives me a $200 service charge. And he says, "Your furnace needs to be replaced." I say, "Crap." So I replace my furnace, and that's $5,000. And everything's good. I just spent $5,000. I'm making $600 a month. So, you know, it ate my cash flow for quite a few months. But no big deal. We're going to make that up. And then guess what happens? 8 months later, my water heater goes out. And then my refrigerator breaks down. I got to replace that. And guess what? A year later, my roof has a leak and I have to replace my roof. And that's $9,000.
Right.
And guess what? This is a true story. This happened to me on one of my houses that was making me about $600 a month. And that's exactly what happened. And where did my cash flow go? Gone. Poof. Gone.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm not trying to say that they don't make money, but most people think they make more than what they make because they see the $600 and they're like, "Ooh-wee, this is great. Right. I could buy a couple of these and I get 10 of these, six grand a month, baby. Man, yeah. I get 20 of these. I got $12,000 a month. I could retire." Right. And they go, "This is great. I just 20 houses and boom, I'm done." But then they forget that they have these other expenses that pop up. And all of a sudden that $600 a month, guess what? If you life that into a 5-year period, it's more like $100 a month, maybe two, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So now instead of 20, we got to have 100. Right.
So, Todd, I feel like you've been listening to my story or you've been watching over my shoulder. That was literally my story.
It's everybody's story.
Yeah.
Okay. So now let's bring it back home. So what you got to look at with your lifestyle, with where you're at. Look, you got a good job. You probably at least semi-enjoy your job. Okay. You get to go there, you work your hours and you're done. And you spend your time with your family, with your friends and enjoy those things. Where are you going to fit in this active investing lifestyle? Where are you going to fit that in? And think about the last 6 months of your life and how busy you were and try to fit it into those last 6 months. And think about then the next 6 months and how busy you'll be and try to fit it into your life. And I'm not telling you, you know, if you buy 10 single family homes, you're going to be spending 40 hours a week doing it. No, you're going to be spending, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours a week. But you still are going to be spending some time. So think about that. Does it fit into my lifestyle? And by the way, Randy, I would venture to guess that most people, when they're first starting out, they're buying their single family or their duplex, they're going to buy it in a rough neighborhood because that's just the cheaper real estate. It makes it cash flows, right? Or on paper, at least it cash flows. So buying in the cheaper neighborhood, it's harder to find tenants. It's harder. It just takes time and effort. And you got to find the property. Now, what's the alternative route? Passive investing. Invest in a syndication. Not that that doesn't take time and effort, because you definitely should do your due diligence on the sponsor, on the deal, on the market. Make sure you're reading through the business plan. Is it a sound business plan? Check all the boxes, right? So I don't want to tell people that's the easy route, because it certainly needs a lot of homework on the upfront end, right?
Yep.
Do a good job with that. Don't skimp over it. Don't just say, "I like this guy. He's got my money. He's gonna keep after it." No, make sure you're doing your due diligence. Make sure you do like the person, but then do your due diligence on the front end. But from there, it's a passive investment.
Yep.
Yeah, I love it. And thanks for walking through that. I think it's the listener that is listening to the show has heard these same stories over and over and over again. But I think emphasizing the details is really, really powerful. And it's the same experience I went through. It's the same experience many of my partners and a lot of my past investors, they start there and then realize real quickly that my time's better spent in my W-2 where I'm, you know, that's my expertise. So I'm going to spend my time and energy there and then trust my dollars to somebody who their expertise is somebody like yourself, who's been doing this since 2008 and had over 100 homes and now thousands and thousands of multifamily units. So, well, let's dig into, gosh, we're already at 30 minutes, but I really want to get in and hear more about today's business, if we can, Todd, and then your ideas on even where we're at in the market. So let's, where are you guys now? How many units do you have? What's the business look like? Let's go from there.
Yeah, so I think we're around 3,000 units right now. It's mostly multifamily, some assisted living as well. And then we actually have a, so what I consider myself or our company is a value add commercial real estate company. Our main niche, our bread and butter is multifamily. Okay. We're typically buying B to A minus multifamily, but it's a value add story. And so we will look at several asset classes, of commercial real estate too. So we have a retail shopping center that's actually just amazing. It's crushing it. We've got an industrial building. That's the same thing. It's amazing. It's crushing it. And then we have our assisted living, that is, either amazing and crushing it or not amazing and not crushing it. So we can talk about those and the difference, but
sure.
So we like diversification with, so here's what I'll say. A lot of people are like, oh, you don't want to get distracted. And I agree with that. You don't want to get distracted. You want to have your niche. But what I say is my niche is value add real estate. Right? I like diversification within my niche. Okay. And so I'm not married to multifamily, just is the one we're the best at and the focus the most on, but it doesn't mean it's the only thing we'll ever do. Okay. So that, if that makes sense to why we diversify a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. We talk a lot about multifamily and we've talked some about industrial, but we've not talked about assisted living. And, you know, my very high level understanding of it is it's basically multifamily, but then you've got a huge, huge operations aspect to it.
Yes.
Dealing with medical facilities and doctors and, maybe higher skilled workers that you've got to have on staff. So can you share with the audience a little bit more about that and what that opportunity looks like?
Yeah. So we've got, about 350 beds of assisted living, which ends up being about 300 employees. Okay. So you can see how many employees we have.
Yeah.
We have a lot of nurses and then we have your LPNs and just your floor workers and so on. So there's a lot of different levels to people that you have. It's very labor intensive. I mean, we're open 24/7. Right. So you have care at all times. Our typical buildings are you there?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Our typical buildings are, you know, 20 to 30 beds.
Okay.
Per building. And so what that is, looks like is you have a bedroom with usually at least a toilet and a sink, oftentimes a toilet, sink, and shower. You might have a kitchenette, you might not, but it's not a full kitchen. And then you have a common area kitchen. So if you have people cooking, the residents don't cook. You have a living room, you might have a couple living rooms, you might have a rec room, that type of thing. So it's like a big single family. We're spread out on one level.
Yeah.
You know, so look, I mean, they're good, but they're a lot of work.
Yeah.
And so your success relies on your employees' success. And so that's the biggest challenge with them, is you're only as good as your staff. And I would say it's the same thing with multifamily. If I've got 150 unit, my on-site staff can really, really make or break my property.
Yeah. Yep.
But I'm talking, you know, two, you know, a maintenance and an on-site, maybe it's four, maybe it's six, depending on the size of the property. But for that same size property, you know, let's say we got 150 unit multifamily, we probably got up to four people. Okay. If I got 150 beds of assisted living, I've got probably close to 100 people.
Okay. That's crazy.
That's a lot. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
And so when I said, you know, I got some that are crushing it, I've got these properties, these locations in Minnesota, we get really high rates. And so our margins, we got good margins. We make a lot of money on those properties. We've got properties in Wisconsin. Wisconsin doesn't pay very well. Okay. And expenses have gone up drastically. And so we have very low margins there. And so kind of it depends on what the resident pay rate is. And so
interesting.
Yeah, it's such an interesting market, and you'd think, well, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. So Wisconsin, our resident will pay about $4,000 a month. Mm-hmm. Okay. That same exact resident with the same exact level of care in Minnesota will pay about $8,000 a month. So
wow. Unbelievable.
My expenses are the same in Minnesota as Wisconsin. So
wow. So why do business in Wisconsin? Right. Yeah, I think is the big question. Right.
Right.
You would lean towards more Minnesota like markets. Interesting. Okay.
Absolutely.
But clearly there's opportunity for upside, because I know there's a huge, huge market that's ever growing.
Huge.
I hear
this market.
Silver tsunami that I hear people talk about with the
baby
boomers. Okay.
It hasn't started. You know, our typical incoming resident is 80 years old. The baby boomers are not 80 years old yet. So they haven't even hit our places. They're going to start hitting our places in about 2026. Okay. Now there's certainly we have some, but that's not our main demographic. So we got a couple more years and then they're going to start hitting our, and once they start, they don't stop for a long time and our places will get flooded. There is actually an abundance of assisted living right now. We don't need more in most locations.
Got it.
We will quickly be undersupplied in just a matter of 2 years. We will be undersupplied and it will be very hard to catch up to that supply.
Yeah, because it's not just as easy as turning a switch and all of a sudden you have these facilities in place. It has a longer tail, I would imagine, to get those things started.
I mean, think of the undersupply of multifamily, and it took until just like now to finally fill that supply. I don't see how we can fill the supply with the amount of demand coming out of the market. And so the places right now that are built will be, there'll be waiting lists for them, and you will be 100% occupied. And rates will definitely go up to match the market. And so it's an exciting time. We are just about to get into that market where we've got so high demand and so little supply.
Interesting. I think we'll see a flood of operators jump into the space, as we always do. And of course, the best performers, folks that got in on it earlier, will have the upper hand. So is the goal of your organization to focus more heavily on that in the coming years, or?
You know, we would like to continue to grow our Minnesota footprint strategically. I believe the locations need to have a lot more kind of modern amenities. The baby boomers are very picky compared to the previous generations. So buildings that are set up really well and have kind of everything that you need, I think are going to be the best for as far as opportunity. So yeah, makes sense. We certainly think there's opportunity in the right markets. And I would love to have a package of these properties that honestly, as the exuberance, as we get over exuberant in the market, that mm-hmm. we can package and sell to, you know, a REIT or a company that wants to take those down, and it's growing. So that's kind of the business plan right now.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I feel like we could talk for another half an hour. I've got like a dozen more questions, but certainly want to be respectful of your time and our listeners' time. But this has been great. I love the conversation around assisted living. I love hearing your story about the transition from shop teacher to single family to multifamily and beyond. I think this has been a great conversation, Todd. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, very good. Well, before we wrap up, I do have a few questions that I like to ask everybody. So let's jump right in if we can. Is there, and this is a little bit different. I like to gear these questions towards that newer passive investor. So are there any educational resources that you think are relevant for that type of investor?
Well, I think you've probably had him on, Brian Burke. He's got a great book, The Hands-Off Investor, I believe it's called.
Yep.
Joe Fairless wrote a good book. It's the best ever syndication book. Now, that's geared towards the active syndicator, but I think there's a lot of lessons in there. If people want to jump onto my website, EnduriceCapital.com, we've got some blogs as well that we wrote that are geared towards both the active and the passive investor. But anything that's geared towards the active is still good for the passive investor. What I think is really important for anybody that's looking at passive or thinking about it, first of all, of course, to get educated on it. But second of all, to create a list. And it doesn't have to be somebody else's list, but it can be based on other people's lists. What I would think about is create that those lists of questions or check marks that you want to make sure you check off onto every single deal, and create your own list of what's important to you. Everybody has different approaches and different reasons they want to invest in real estate. And don't get caught on somebody else's reason, right? Understand what your own goals and objectives are. Are you a cash flow person? Do you like cash flow? Do you like long-term? Do you like fixed rate debt? Do you like the idea of a long-term hold? Well, then don't invest with an investor that's going to flip a property, right? If that's what you like, why invest with the guy who's going to be in and out of the property in 2 to 3 years? But if you're like, hey, I love velocity of money, I want to get in and out of these deals, I really like that, and I'm okay with the extra risk, well, then that's probably your horse to bet on, right? So think about what you actually want, not what somebody else wants, and create that checklist for yourself.
I love it, Todd. Really, such a great point, too. I think there is no one-size-fits-all for every investor out there.
No.
And I think most investors don't truly even know what they want when they first get started. So spending the time early on to figure that out is so important. I did 100%. Not do a good enough job on that myself.
I think most people don't, and that's okay. But you just got to keep on learning and growing. And you know, you might take an approach to start with that you end up going, you know what, I would. As I'm doing this, I'd prefer this approach. I mean, I flipped houses. I don't like that approach, right? Sure. I like the rental approach. It's okay to change, but you know, spend some time on the front end and try to at least figure it out as much as you can.
Love it. Here's one I didn't mention before, and you're not prepped on this one, but I find that I'm spending more and more time like watching economic trends and learning more about the economy and how that impacts the commercial real estate space. Do you have any resources that you leverage to stay on top of that or just continue your education process?
Honestly, probably my biggest resource is LinkedIn. Because I think a lot of, and I follow economists on LinkedIn. I follow, economists that specialize in real estate, general economists. I would say that's my biggest resource. I go on LinkedIn and I'm specifically trying to follow the right people that put out good content, and write good articles.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, it's long gone are the days where everybody gets the newspaper delivered or has even the morning news on, anything like that. I go to LinkedIn every single morning, and I've got 8 or 10 guys that are follow that. Those are the people that I trust with what's going on. So yeah, really good point. Okay, well, a couple of fun questions here, and we'll wrap it up. But is there a recent bucket list item you've checked off your list, or one you're hoping to in the near future?
Man, I probably the most recent is elk hunting in the mountains. So I've done that the last couple of years now, and another one would be moose hunting in the mountains. I have not done that or any moose hunting. It doesn't have to be the mountains. But probably my biggest bucket list that I'd like to check off eventually here is heliskiing, either in BC or Alaska. I really want to do some heliskiing. I've done the cat skiing where they take you up in a snow cat, you know, basically bring you up there, and that's a blast. And I want to do heliskiing. So if anybody's listening to this and they want to take me heliskiing, I'm all ears. Let's talk.
You know, we hang out with some guys in the mastermind we're part of. I bet you if any of them are listening, they will raise their hand and let you know. So very cool. All right. And then final question here. If you had $100,000 that was given you today and you had to invest it before the end of the week, and you couldn't invest it in your own deal, where would you put that capital?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. Obviously, real estate comes to my mind at first, but that's where most of my investments are. And I love real estate. I absolutely love it. So I've got lots of money in real estate.
Sure.
Lots of zeros in real estate. But I think I would probably diversify into something else. And I've been attracted to oil and gas. So I know that's not what we talk about on this show, but I think I personally would diversify into oil and gas and do something like that. If I had $100,000 just burning a hole in my pocket and I wanted to place it. So
love it. Love it. Lot of really, really good tax benefits to playing in that space too. So,
yeah. And I don't have any of it. So, you know,
there you go.
I actually honestly would probably still put it in real estate, but you know, back of my mind says oil and gas.
There you go. Very good. Well, Todd, thank you again so much. This has been a lot of fun. It's neat just to get to know people more through this podcast process, and you brought a ton of value. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. And to our listeners, as always, we encourage you to continue your education journey. But more important than that, make the decision to invest in your first passive deal or active deal for that matter. Both Todd and I are convinced once you do, you will just wish you would have started that much sooner. So be sure to subscribe and follow and like if you can, and then join us again next Thursday for another great episode. And thanks so much again for joining us today.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.